those days where you're constantly 5 minutes behind?
Do I?
I had one of those days today, Sam.
Yeah, so am I.
And also one of those days where you take the wrong exit to get to the radio station.
You too?
Yes, me too.
Wow. It must be magic or something.
I'm just going to bask in the fact that I got the right exit and I did something right and everyone else is wrong.
Shut up, Mike.
This is Ask an Atheist. You can give us a call at 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Took the right exit.
Yeah, well, that's a good start. And fan favorite once again, Libby, how are you?
Good. Am I still a fan favorite? It's been a while. It's been a long time.
Your name is still related search on Google, and that's usually my indicator, so... Oh.
I don't want to ask what other words are also being searched on Google along with my name.
I try very hard not to think about that.
Can probably guess.
I think ask an atheist is the two words.
Let's just go with that.
Okay, very good. Did you guys know that it's 130 days until the world ends again?
Again?
Yeah. We're actually going to talk about it this time because, well, the beginning of the end has actually started for our friend of the show, Harold Camping. Last night, and this comes to us from the Daily Mail, the radio preacher who sparked an international media frenzy by predicting the end of the world last month has suffered a stroke. Harold Camping was rushed to hospital from his Alameda, California home on Thursday night. The 89-year-old has survived the stroke, but there are fears that the gravelly famous voice he used to make his predictions to millions around the world will never be the same. Slurring his words, preacher Harold Camping, 89, has suffered a stroke, a neighbor told local media that the stroke was on Camping's right side. His speech appears to be slurred, but otherwise he's okay.
Well, his speech was already kind of slurred, wasn't it?
Well, he's 89.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I'm going to say the potentially unpopular Christopher Hitchens thing, but I really don't care. I don't feel bad at all for this guy.
I have a really difficult time mustering sympathy for him, too, and maybe that makes me a jerk, but you know, I'm owning it. I'm a jerk, fine. I mean, the guy said things that terrified people, that made them, that influenced them to make really poor decisions.
Including suicide, by the way. There actually was a mother, I believe in Russia, who slit the throats of two of her children. Thankfully, they were okay. They stopped them before they bled out. And there's also a teenager who committed suicide over this. People who've lost their homes and given everything away. So I don't feel bad for this guy. I hope in his dementia that he says, hey, maybe I'll give money away.
Well, one of the things that you and I have been talking about is that we're expecting his... We said, you know, he's 89. His personal end of the world is coming, whether he wants it or not. I mean, that's just statistics. Talk to an actuary table. And here we go, you know, 3 weeks later, and we're finding that's true. And there were people on the show saying that maybe this is just his last hurrah before he goes into that twilight. But, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't feel at all bad for this guy. I like Libby says, I have a very hard time feeling bad for somebody who callously destroyed people's lives. And the sooner he fades away from headlines and we don't have to think about him anymore, the better.
Well, I think either way, he's got one more swing in him with that 130-day deadline. But
yeah. Do you think he's going to outlive it, though?
Do we start that betting pool?
I don't know.
And somebody on Facebook was like, well, at least we're going to have the last laugh. And no, this is a functional stroke on his right side. Quite possibly, he's having the last laugh right now.
Yeah.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call. Let us know how you felt about that.
And if you feel anything in your right side. If not, consult your doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, we're starting off busy today.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah, okay. So, as you guys know from last week, we kind of made a bit of a challenge. So, we made a challenge to...
Blackson Bao, who's a host of a public access program based out of Atlanta, Georgia. This is somebody who said a lot of really stupid, bigoted things on his show, and we invited him to defend these things.
Right.
So, I guess here he is.
No, actually, this is not.
This is not him, oh, thankfully.
Yeah, no.
Airways are a little cleaner.
So, we did say last week that we talked about his homophobia or his hatred of homosexuality.
And the fact that he was embracing pseudoscience to try to defend this stuff.
Yeah, and we said we had tried to contact organizations at the Atlanta area to get their take on this. And we have two people from that organization with us right now. We have Benjamin and Mandisa, both from Atlanta. Let me see if I can bring you in. Mandisa, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And Benjamin, are you with us? Hello?
Hello?
Hey,
hello?
Welcome to Ask an Atheist.
I'm not Benjamin, though.
Oh, you are?
No, I'm John from Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, sorry, John.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
I can be put on hold again, though. but wait.
We'll talk to you in a minute. All right,
thanks, John.
We're experiencing technical difficulties.
I think we just hung up on him because I don't know how to work this equipment.
No.
Please call back.
John, please call us back.
John, please call us back. We're so sorry. We didn't mean to hang
up. Anyways, Mandisa.
Yes, how
welcome.
Are you?
Doing great. Doing great. How's everything going in Atlanta right now?
Everything is going well. It's a bit hectic right now, but it is going well. I really appreciate y'all reaching out to us to get some clarification on the situation and also looking into the fact that there are other groups in the area that are definitely not like Black Atheists of Atlanta.
So you're actually the president of the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. Tell us about your group.
Yes, well, we are Secular Fellowship, which is dedicated to helping bring out other nonbelievers in the Black community. You know, I don't know if you had a chance to check out our website, but we unfortunately have a special dynamic when it comes to religion in our community. The Black Church has such a stranglehold on our community, and also any like supernatural and religious claims, as you kind of heard last week from Black Sun and his people. These types of ideas run rampant in our communities, and for many of us, it is very difficult to express ideas to the contrary. That if we don't believe, you know, you are very much ostracized from your community. And for some, there are a lot of people who are still sitting in the churches who don't believe, who are afraid of losing everything.
Yeah.
And so, and it's really, really something that is a concern to us, because I've had people, ever since I have fully come back to embracing, like, just saying I'm an atheist, I have so many people come to me and say to me, thank you for saying that. I thought I was the only one who felt that way. There are so many people out there. They need to know that there are others. They are not alone. That we're trying to establish a network and a community for other Black nonbelievers. And in particular, you know, we're not a separatist group. We're basically trying to help each other bridge the gap in the community at large.
Absolutely. And this is something we talked about last week, where people, with our caller last week, where people seem to think that when you give up the religious claims, that means you must also give up the entire social substrate that you exist in. You know, your friends, your family, your connections. And
Right,
yeah.
So, Mandisa, I have to ask, why do you think that this sort of connection to churches and sort of magical thinking is so strong in the Black community?
Well, because for the longest time, and, you know, it throughout history, you know, and it is no secret that Christianity was imposed upon the Africans, upon arriving to the country.
Right.
And being indoctrinated by force. It has been the dominant religion in the Black community. And so it's really been a part of a lot of people's lives. For many, the church is all that a lot of Black people had.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, not necessarily all through the Civil Rights Movement, but through a lot of the struggles, the church seems to have been at the forefront of the Civil Rights Movement. It wasn't necessarily all instrumental, but it became a focal point, because that's where people were allowed to meet without getting shot or killed or you know, hurt. So it's been a part of a lot of people's lives for a long time.
That was a conversation we've been having, is, you know, is that the church in the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s and onwards, the church played a central role, and a lot of people like to say that this couldn't have happened because of the church, or was the church incidental? And that's a debate we've been having.
Yeah, I think it is incidental, because there were a lot of people, like, for example, Bayard Rustin, who was a Quaker, but he was also gay, but he was also instrumental. He was very much an advisor to Martin Luther King Jr. in the movement. So there were others that were not directly involved in the church that were involved in the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah, I know that. I've heard that too, and I've seen that one thing I've talked about is how, if you look at, say, the gay rights movement, that a church really isn't the central piece to that, that there are secular community centers. And do you think that the civil rights movement, of course it wouldn't have taken the same shape necessarily, but you think that it could have formed around secular community centers, or...?
I think it really should have, because the problems in our community are not necessarily religiously based. They're human rights struggles.
Yeah,
and I
absolutely.
Think every race and every culture has experienced a human rights issue, you know, and so it's not just based, it wasn't just based on your religious beliefs, it was based on, a lot of it was your color, and also, you know, your background. So it didn't necessarily have to do with, you know, what religion you practiced. So I think that, you know, I think that it did kind of shift in a way from the human rights aspect to it just being, I guess, maybe a religious aspect, which is not necessarily accurate.
Right, right. Yeah. It was just a transition because of the situation and the culture in which things were put together. Just it happened to be around religion, so that became the nucleus. So, from what I understood in talking to you online, I hate to bring this up, but there's a reason you're with us today. Is that you know, like last week we played some clips of the air on the Black Atheists of Atlanta show, and you're a different organization, but you are familiar with this person, correct?
Yes. Upon trying to find some groups in Atlanta, because one thing that I know I've been pushing and other Black atheists online have been pushing has been to, for more of us to get out, get engaged, go to meetups or go to meetings and become more involved in the community as well as the movement, and to speak out about your non-belief. Because it won't do any good if we stay silent,
right,
or just stay behind the computer screen and just talk amongst each other.
Right.
You know, it's time for us to come all, and this is not just Black atheists, all atheists, you know, as a whole. So upon...
Yeah. I think we agree.
upon doing some research, I saw that Black Sun was putting together a Black atheist meeting. So I expressed some interest in that, and in between that time, I had met Ben at a meetup, and we decided to form Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, BNOA for short. And so, in getting in touch with Black Sun and some of his people, you know, they had a planning session, and we thought that would be a good opportunity to network with them, because, you know, they were atheists as well, so they did kind of join our online forum on Facebook, and we quickly found out that their beliefs or their, we found out about their homophobic and separatist ideas.
Yeah.
Right, and I understand that after that point, a lot of the people that we thought were interesting on that show sort of jumped ship.
Yeah, they did, and it eventually got to the point where we severed ties with Black Sun and another one of his colleagues, because we said, you know, the homophobic issue kept coming up, and we said no. And then also in also speaking with other organizations that, you know, he tried to work with, we realized that we're like, no, we don't want to be, and it's hard,
right,
for us to say we don't want to work with someone, but when you have people that are toxic and who have these ideas, you know, I don't care what color you are, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, yeah, no, that I understand exactly. I mean, we've had, not to name names because it was private, but we've had our own experiences with some loose cannons coming into the community and coming into the project and having just ideas that were completely off target from what we wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it sounds like in your case, this particular loose cannon had the keys to the castle in this case.
And a TV show.
Yeah.
Yes, and, you know, he was working, I think he still is working on a documentary called The God Concept, which is a bunch of, and let me just say that, you know, my background is not, I wasn't raised a Christian, I was raised a Black nationalist. I was raised to think that, you know, all whites were bad, I should not associate with them, and that we should be separate as a people, but as I grew up, I realized that that was not something that I needed to embody or that I wanted to embody, because I try to love everyone, and I try to, like, get along with everybody. So I realized that it was very counterproductive.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of that amongst them, and it's, you know, it was something I didn't want to be a part of. You know, and you know, so, but once we, you know, once we severed ties with their organization, that's when they came up with, and they formed Black Atheists of Atlanta.
Okay.
So I said, you know what, if that will work for them, that's fine. I wish them the best of luck with that, but we will not have that over here.
So they it sounds like they picked a name, sort of a sound-alike name, to get maybe some Google clicks or something
like
that.
They did, not only to kind of take away from Black Non-Believers of Atlanta, but also Black Atheists of America.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, fair point, yeah.
Which is a group that was founded by Ayanna Watson, and it's a great group. We're looking to collaborate with them among other atheist groups as well. Well, so it was really, really, I think it was a stab at both of us.
Fair enough.
Both of our organizations.
All right, Mandy, so we're going to need to go into the break, but why don't you hang with us, and we will continue this conversation when we get back.
Okay,
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we'll be back in a moment.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And so, Mandisa, Black Non-Believers of Atlanta, what are you guys doing these days? What's the focus of the organization this month?
Right now, we are getting ready for Atheist Solidarity Day. We have a series of events that will be taking place next weekend. It's an opportunity for some officials out here to get to know who we are. We're also having our monthly general meeting, and our general meetings consist of poetry reading, singing, which is done by myself. I do sing. And, just a general get-together for people to discuss the issues that really focus on, you know, our concerns every day, or our issues that focus on us every day. And we are looking to have a press conference down by the Georgia Capitol, which is being put together by our public relations director, to have some of the officials out here speak with us, to let them know that we're here and we are just your everyday people. And a lot of our members do like to go out. They like to socialize. So we are trying to get together some nice events that, you know, where we have a lot of, we like to have fun. And so we're definitely focused on that aspect as well.
Right.
But so, yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, what has the response been so far?
So far, the responses have been great. We are on Meetup as well, and we do have our website. We've had a lot of people say that they are glad to see us here, that they feel like this is a group that they can really be a part of. They are really, really excited.
Great.
About us, and it's the responses have been very, very positive, not only from the Black community, but also from other atheist groups as well. We have
We are connecting with American Atheists, Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Fantastic.
You know, there's been a lot of good.
So if people would like to find Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta on the web, where would they look?
Our website is www.blacknonbelievers.org. We are also on Meetup at Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta.
Great.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Bendis. It's been great talking to you, and we look forward to working with you in the future, and I'll certainly be in contact with you soon.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me again.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Always nice to end on a high note.
Yes.
It's easy for us to go around even in our own community and just poke a stick at the crazy guy.
Yeah.
But when there's a positive alternative, I think we have to highlight it.
Absolutely.
There are real people doing real work on this subject. There's a lot of good stuff going on that doesn't have the nationalism or the bigotry involved.
Or the tinfoil hats.
Exactly.
Right. The tinfoil hats especially. My goodness.
And we have to highlight that. And like I said, we will be working with BNOA in the future. I've had really great conversations with them online. They're fantastic people, and they're not the people running the TV show.
We like to say that again. These are not the people running the TV show.
All right. So we had a couple calls that I dropped because I'm kind of a dork. Benjamin and John, if you're listening and you'd like to call in, you have my sincerest apologies. Please call back in. We'd love to talk to you. In the meantime, we do have some emails, and I'm going to start. There has been a response about this, and we should address our viewers about this one. And this one comes from Jordan, who's from Renton. So, hey, local. And he writes, Blackson refused to acknowledge the scientific findings based on his assumption that the scientists involved were white. No attempt to even discuss the specifics of the findings or how the study was done. His base assumption is that white scientists are incapable of doing good science because they are inherently biased against blacks.
I think there's another an inherent assumption that he makes. One of them is that the scientists were white in the first place. That if you get a scientific paper, it just says Dr. Ben Smith.
Yeah.
What do we know about Ben Smith other than the work in the paper? And if you're going to debunk Ben Smith's work, you do it by debunking the work in the paper. It's irrelevant to the color of his skin. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the way science works. And I just have to say, I agree with Jordan. When I was listening to the episode, because I wasn't on the crew that day, I kind of thought the same thing. I was like, first of all, why does it matter what color the skin was of the scientists who did particular studies? It doesn't matter. Hopefully it doesn't affect in any way, shape, or form how they use the scientific method and how science is done. Who cares?
Once again, for the sake of honesty and to be real about what's going on in the scientific community, there is and was such a thing as scientific racism. However, it's not racism that's based in science. It's basically racism that misappropriates science.
It's a racist scientist hijacking the process and polluting it with their own bigotries and biases.
Yeah.
That if there is racism in a scientific paper, you will find it by taking the paper apart, not by looking at a photograph of the author.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That there is good work being done by white scientists, black scientists, Asian scientists, Indian scientists, all over the world, and their work has to stand on itself.
One of the things that I think that ultimately comes down to is that he's not speaking from a position of knowledge. He's not speaking from a position of skepticism. He's not speaking from a position of evidence. He is speaking from a dogmatic position.
Absolutely right.
Once you bring in dogma, you have nothing more to say. All you're going to say is your dogma from then on.
Yeah, when somebody mentioned that there was a biological basis for homosexuality, he immediately dismissed it. He didn't want to hear anything about it other than, oh, the scientists were white, weren't they?
Yeah.
We don't know that.
Well, and
we don't.
The one thing I'm willing to say about atheism is that if you're doing it dogmatically, you're doing it wrong. And if you want to challenge me on that, or any of us on that, you can give us a call at 253-584-1480. And we've got John from Columbus. How you doing, John?
Hello, guys.
Hi,
hey,
John.
Sorry we hung up on you.
Oh, that's all right. I've been listening to your show for quite a while.
Oh, great.
Actually,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I actually found out about you guys through the Atheist Experience through Austin.
Cool.
Because I search the internet and I look at different sites and listen to the videos on YouTube a lot and stuff. And you guys, I like to listen to your shows. I'm also a gay man.
Okay.
So, and I was listening to your input there about homophobia and stuff, and I listened to that little podcast thing last week, and mm-hmm. I was just listening to the lady from Atlanta, and I think I've gotten to this point in my life. I'm in my upper 50s, and I just don't take that crap from people anymore.
Good for you. Good, yeah.
It's mainly on a religious basis, though. I'm an atheist as well, but I even grew up in a Roman Catholic family, even was in the seminary to become a priest at one time.
Wow.
So okay. I've seen the church from the inside out, and it's so ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But anyway.
So I have to ask, though, John, what was the turning point? At what point did you say, this doesn't really work for me, and you moved to non-belief?
Well, there were a couple different things. First of all, I guess growing up in that atmosphere, I went through 12 years of Catholic school from first grade through 12. And when I got out of high school, I went to college and didn't graduate, but I went for like 2.5 years. And I went to, college for a while. And it was this blatant realization that there are other people in the world other than Catholic people.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But the funny part is the neighborhood I grew up in, most of the neighbors were Jewish. So I went to the Catholic school, which was like a block away from my house. And when I came home, I played with my Jewish friends.
Yeah.
And my next door neighbors were Orthodox Jews, and they didn't drive a car after sundown. They didn't turn a light on, no money, nothing. They walked to temple. And I kept thinking, gee, there's something peculiar here. Here's my family, I get in the car and go. And we've even asked them before. I remember when it was raining, if they wanted to ride, they would not take a ride. And this just kept playing on me. And I didn't really think much about it because you're kind of insulated in a family like that.
Sure.
And then I even thought, I belong to, it was called the Newman Center, which was a Catholic organization at the university, and I got involved in that, and that's how I actually thought, oh, gee, it would be so cool to, go to the seminary and stuff. And I thought, once I was there for a year, and that was enough.
So that's kind of cool. You just this broader exposure to so many different ideas and different people just sort of helped you shift away from Catholicism and into kind of a thinking, I'm assuming, thinking for yourself and just kind of opening up to other ideas and other concepts. That's really cool to hear.
It's also kind of interesting how a deeper religious education tends to turn somebody into either a priest or an atheist.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. The reason I'm not Catholic anymore is because I was raised Catholic.
I've run into a lot of ex-Catholics.
Yeah.
So you actually called about the show yesterday. You said you weren't going to take any more guff on this subject.
Yeah, well, I work at a major grocery retailer here in town. Mm. And that wasn't really something of my choice. I worked at a major bank until my job was outsourced to India, and I just got tired of the political stuff in the bank.
Right.
But I deal with all these different people all day long.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of younger kids that work there. And I guess maybe I'm a little bit of a rebel in a way, or an antagonist maybe. And I'll bring a joke that I've heard on, the internet or something, and I'll tell it to them, and they laugh. And then there's a site. Do you know of Michael Nugent from Ireland?
I don't believe I've heard of him, no.
Well, he has a site called Atheist Ireland.
Oh, yeah. And, okay, I'm familiar with the website.
Oh,
I've heard of the group.
Yeah, well, I was listening to this, one video of his the other day, and I typed it. I typed the thing out while I was listening to it, so I had to keep stopping the video. It's just really short. I could read it to you?
If you can be kind of quick, because we have to move on and hit our emails.
Okay. Well, it basically, the most powerful creature ever created the universe of over 100 billion galaxies, each of which contains over 100 billion stars like our sun, and then waited for 14 billion years, then picked one of those 100 billion galaxies, then picked one of those 100 billion stars in that galaxy, then picked one of the planets circling that star, and then picked one of the millions of species that existed on that planet, and then picked one individual of that species and said, I think I really have to tell that guy to stop gathering sticks. And that guy said that so succinctly. And I let some of these kids read this.
Yeah.
And their expression, because some of them know, you know, my stand on religion.
Sure.
Some of them said, oh, I really, you know, I can see your point, John. And
nice.
Some of them thought it was a joke.
Nice.
John,
right.
That's great.
Yeah. John, but we're
so
going to...
I just, I'll let you go, but right. It was really great talking to you guys.
Great
and
talking
I really
to you.
Appreciate your show.
All right, thank you very
you,
much.
Thank you, John.
That's pretty funny.
Eh, kids get these things. And it's because of the rebels that they get these things.
You kids with your hula hoops and your atheism.
It is. Your hula hoops and your iPods and your iPlods.
And your
hippity hop music.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. And, you know, I've met a lot of ex-clergy who are now atheists and are very active using those skills they got.
And that is not the first time, by the way, that I've heard I'm an atheist because I was raised Catholic.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very nice. All right, so we got another email. This is Kyle Reese from L.A. And he goes, hello, brethren. Are you sure you're directing this at us? Have you heard of the idea that God is some kind of self-aware, artificially intelligent system and that Jesus was a cyborg created by this machine God? If God is a machine, and then cyborg Jesus would in fact be both God and man, as most Christians believe.
The thing I noticed about this email right off the bat is his name is Kyle Reese.
Yeah.
And if you're not familiar with that name, that was the protagonist in the first Terminator movie. So I have imagined that... I have to believe this is too big of a coincidence that Kyle Reese is talking about machines and men. But I don't know. Have I heard of that idea? Well, I have now.
Yeah.
And I also heard it on a little show called Battlestar Galactica.
I've also read about it in a book called Hyperion, actually.
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good
this,
book.
This, it's one of my favorites, and this sounds vaguely Teal Hardian to me. I don't know, sort of, you know, evolution of God, whatever. And it was pretty compelling when I read it. It makes for great fiction, but... once again,
where's the evidence?
I think there would be more evidence for a machine god, like an operating system patch, maybe some sort of system fault. As a computer,
at some point you'd get that error 404 message.
Right, right, right. At some point there'd be some sort of kernel panic, and I'd get some, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide thing sticking its tongue out at me saying reboot the universe to continue.
Some 13-year-old kid in the basement with Cheetos all over his face would hack Jesus God.
Right. Occasionally the sun would be replaced with a lolcat picture. I mean, there'd be some clue
that you'd have the very laws of physics would be broken, and you'd have to call IT and complain, and you have to wait on hold because everyone else is complaining.
The apostles
the rain is
are
going
all
up.
From 4chan.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I've noticed about technology is that once there's a culture around it, the culture tends to be pretty ridiculous. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We have another email. This is a quick one. This is
speaking of ridiculous.
This is John Spinoza from the internet, and...
also, I believe, an assumed name.
Yeah, probably. A listener... sounds very lost, doesn't it, actually? A listener who wondered whether what to say when told by religious believers, you're going to hell. Only if it exists.
Indeed. Moving on. There's not much else you can say to that.
Yeah.
Oh, we have one. Shamar from the internet. You should consider contacting the other black secular groups in Atlanta and getting a statement from them.
It's like we're psychic.
Yeah.
Or Shamar is psychic, or maybe we just need to say, done and done.
Yeah.
And let's reiterate it again. The black non-believers of Atlanta have nothing to do with the black atheists of Atlanta, or blacks and bow.
The People's Judean Front has nothing to do with the People's Front of Judea. No. Yeah, it's... But no, the black non-believers of Atlanta are the cool folks. And...
Yeah.
Hang out with them.
Support them.
Wonderful, yeah. Intelligent, you know, skeptically thinking.
And the other thing we should address
tolerant.
Is that while we're when we find homophobia and bigotry in the media in the name of atheism, we have to point it out. But that doesn't necessarily mean we have to get into some sort of atheist internet fist fight with everybody.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, we have heard from.
Yeah, I had a brief YouTube. I guess you could say an email back and forth with Blaxenbaugh, because right now he feels like the prettiest bigot at the ball, and he wants to pick some sort of fist fight, and I guess Matt Dillahunty already said that he wouldn't go to prom with him, so he wanted to pick a fight with us.
Yeah.
And he wanted to have some kind of public throwdown with us where his supporters, all three of them that work on the show, can defend their views, and we offered him the opportunity to call in, that he can call in anytime he wants and defend his views. And it's free. It just takes a phone call. And with cell phones nowadays, it isn't even a long-distance phone call.
We will accept his call, and that's 253-584-1480.
So, Blacks and Bell, we're not going to screen you. If you, you want to throw your challenge out there, you want to throw down the gauntlet, call in.
Yeah.
We're not going to call into your show because we don't want to give your show any more attention than it already has. We don't want to give you or your bigoted views any more attention than it already has. And we're not going to treat you like a worthy opponent. The reason we went after a guy like Harold Camping for so long is this is a guy who has power. This is a guy who really destroyed lives. This is a guy with 70 radio stations.
And
this
is like $140 million. Yeah,
this is a guy who has an effect. You're one guy who, even among your own atheist community in your city, is known as a freak and a fluke and a kook. You're a crazy man, and there's only so long we can poke the crazy man with a stick. You are not a worthy opponent. If you want to call in and defend yourself, though, by all means, our phone number is 253-584-1480.
And if you hear this in the podcast, just look at the bottom of the screen. We have a voicemail line. Call that. So, and leave us a message, and we'll even go there. But we're not... There's going to be no internet battle about this one. I'm not.
This is an East Coast atheist versus West Coast atheists.
It's not even really, in my opinion, particularly worth our time to try to have any kind of a throwdown against Blackson. We've already won that debate because we acted like sensible, sane people, and he said a bunch of kooky, bigoted, weird stuff. So, you know, where do you go from there?
That said, ooh, burn a little.
I'm here for color commentary. What do you expect? I've got to throw in my opinion.
Once again, Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We will be back in a moment.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
The end of the world is now. Millions will disappear in the rapture, and those left behind will feel the wrath of God.
So who better to help those people feeling the wrath than an atheist? We don't believe in God, so we're pretty sure we won't get raptured out of here.
You can help by donating to Rapture Relief.
We'll use the money to help those afflicted during Armageddon.
And if for some reason this all turns out to be just another failed prophecy, your money won't be wasted.
We'll give it to Camp Quest, which teaches children critical thinking and science so they won't be duped by religious fables in the first place.
Learn more at rapture-relief.org.
A satirical benefit for Camp Quest, brought to you by Seattle Atheists.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Again, Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we do have a name for this particular show. I think you named it, didn't you?
Which show? Oh, yes, the Blood Waters of Dr. Z. No, Blood Emails of Dr. Z.
Oh. You tipped off our source material.
My nerd showed a little bit there.
Because nobody knew that yet.
Yeah. Nobody knew that
no
yet.
No one picked up on that.
Oh, no.
Unless the original filmmakers thought we were fans.
So we have some more emails.
Yeah, we've got one from Jared from the Internet, which I found particularly interesting. He says, I'm an atheist. I was training to become a minister and take over a Baptist church. After reading the Bible, I realized it was wrong. I was wondering what you guys thought about some of the arguments Christians make for proof of God. For example, the first cause argument and the ontological argument, which, kind of to sum up, as Jared said in his email here, is I define God to be X. Since I can conceive of X, X must exist. Therefore, God exists. And Jared goes on to say, I just became an atheist, and I'm still trying to get out of the God exists mentality, since I know it is all BS.
I'm noticing a trend here with people who are training for the ministry suddenly falling out of the ministry when they realize it's crap.
This really
flies a little spooky,
Yeah.
It flies in the face of something that a lot of believers tend to throw at us, which is if we just read the Bible, that we'd become believers. Just read the Bible. The Bible. Well, it seems like there is a good portion of these people who read the Bible who decide that it's kind of bunkum. They don't really believe this stuff, and it in fact makes no sense morally or objectively.
Something I like to point out, actually, that I was thinking about today and talking to somebody online who was saying, oh, you guys read the God Delusion and quote it just like the Bible. I have read the Bible, I have not read The God Delusion.
I've read The God Delusion, but I can't quote it from memory. I have a general idea of the stuff Dawkins says, only because I've seen several speeches by Richard Dawkins after the fact.
Right.
It's a good book, but it's not the good book.
So he's got some ideas that he wants to get our take on, and the first one, I believe, was the first cause argument.
Yeah, the first cause argument, which essentially, if you've never heard of it before, nothing can exist without an initial cause. What caused the beginning of the universe? It must have been God, therefore God exists.
Yeah. But
basically sums it up.
But then there's a special exception made for God that God can't have a cause.
Right, yeah. Because really what happens whenever you start using the first cause argument, you'd be wise to avoid it because you fall into what's called an infinite regress,
yeah.
Which of course means, well, what caused God? Well, what caused the thing that caused God? What caused the thing that caused the thing that caused God? And it just keeps going back eternally.
Programmers love recursion.
Oh, good times.
And it goes back to probably one of my favorite YouTube videos that I made, which is that really short clip of, who made this ball me? Who made me? God. Who made God? This is a wrong question.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, that's the thing, is that you immediately invalidate this universal constant that you throw out at the beginning, this universal rule that everything must have a cause. Well, God doesn't. So you've immediately invalidated this first thing. So why does have the middleman? Why does the universe need a cause?
Yeah, exactly.
The first cause argument is unbelievably arbitrary. And when you have an unbelievably arbitrary rule, that has no evidence behind it. It's just arbitrary for the sake of having a limitation. That's when my skepticism kicks in.
This is all scaffolding and no building. And
right.
The other thing that drives me crazy with it is that even if this argument were valid and even if it worked, even if it were true, even if it were sound, it still doesn't prove the Christian God.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like every one of these things that assumes that there's some kind of a creator, whether it's, oh, this design, look at this flower, isn't it perfect? Even if you prove that there's a designer behind all things living and all things organic and all things natural, you didn't prove that that creator was talking to you as a burning bush or cares about what you do with your private parts or cares about what movies you watch or any of that stuff.
You have proved nothing, essentially.
Right. Bob talked about this a bit ago. I think this is the Kalam argument or something like that, is that you may be proving a creator, but the creator isn't necessarily a deity.
Yeah. Exactly.
It could be invisible rainbow wizard leprechauns from the planet Nimbu.
Yeah, evil aliens. Ooh,
Xenu.
Martian Xenu.
Now, regarding the ontological argument, let me just, for the sake of refreshment, let's read this again. I define God to be X. Since I can conceive of X, X must exist. Really? That is so silly. I can conceive of giant mutant flying clams that can shoot lasers out of their face 2 times a day. Does that really mean that that exists just because my brain can conceive of it?
The first two lines of that argument are also a tautology. I believe God to be X, I can conceive of X. If you believe it to be X, of course you can conceive of X.
Well, the other thing is there's going back to programming, there's a hidden dependency here. And the hidden dependency is that if you can conceive of it, therefore it must exist. Where's your proof for that?
Exactly.
This is just...
You have to find the proof, then the evidence, to correspond this belief with reality in some way. I can conceive of Batman. I can conceive of a martial artist detective with a rocket car. Can you show him to me?
Yeah.
No? Then I do not believe Batman exists.
Actually, it'd be easier to show Batman to you than God. And that's
Batman.
Where the funny thing comes in. And the other thing here is... what they're kind of saying to me is, I can conceive of the thought, therefore the thought exists. Yes, the thought exists, but that's not proof of its existence elsewhere in the universe. It exists as electrochemical interactions in your mind.
So essentially, the ontological argument only makes sense if you're a solipsist, and if you're a solipsist, you're silly.
Right, right.
That's just my opinion. That's not necessarily the opinion of Ask an Atheist.
Maybe that, well, it's my opinion, too.
And you can write us an angry letter from your little jar where your brain is floating.
Right. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on it, and tell us, give us your pod number, and we'll respond to you. It's very strange. And that might make me a strict materialist, but I'll go there.
And
that's fine.
Well, you can, material is demonstrable. You can show material.
Yeah.
You can't show me these sorts of ideas. And the other thing is, people can conceive of, I can conceive of something, and Libby can conceive of something, and those two things can be incompatible.
Right.
I can conceive of a round triangle. Can you draw me this round triangle?
I actually can't conceive of a round triangle.
I'm having difficulty with that one, too.
I can conceive it as long as I don't visualize it.
I guess I'm just not enlightened enough.
Yeah, I think that's. I think we're kind of going back to that Gnostic atheist argument. So we have another email, do we not?
I believe we do. Which one are we looking at?
Okay.
The one from Natalie.
The one from Natalie.
I like this one, because it's kind of sexy.
Kind of sexy. Are we that kind of show now?
Well, I guess we could be.
It's something we want to talk about, but...
Do you want to read it? There you go.
Natalie from Temecula, California. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic.
And we actually got someone who's not just from the internet.
Right, yeah.
I think we should stop saying from the internet, because then people will write from the internet.
I'm kind of okay with that. One of the arguments that theologists use to support the idea that gay is a choice is that because gays generally do not breed, gayness would have been bred out of the human species. However, humans do not use sex in the way that the vast majority of animals do. While most animals, say for bonobo apes and dolphins, etc., use sex solely for reproduction, humans and the exceptions above use sex as a way to build social connections. This is evidenced in the position of the female genitalia in humans and bonobos. It is thought that facing one another during coitus is more personal and intimate. Also, the guest scientist, Christopher Ryan, makes a funny point in the Pope wants us to use sex only for reproduction because it's more civilized, but this is a behavior that only other animals exhibit. Essentially, the Pope wants us to behave like those lower species.
Natalie 1, Pope 0.
Yeah.
Good point.
Mark that down. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the thing I find so insane about this whole idea that something is natural or not natural is somehow... I mean, what did James Randi says that bird poop and gravel is natural?
I believe we said that yesterday. Becky was really surprised that I hauled out harlequin ichthyosis. And then
this idea that the ability to produce young is somehow the thing that validates your relationship.
Right.
As if that's the defining characteristic of your relationship, where I don't think most people get into a romantic relationship, even think about children with this person, or at least have the serious discussion of children with this person
and
for a long time.
Not an issue.
What about people who are infertile?
And if I could just get completely reductionist at this point, and this is not what I normally do, I just break it down to just... benefit to society and stuff like that. So much more has been done for civilization based on social pair bonding and social group bonding than mere reproduction.
Yes.
Reproduction just means there are more people. There are a lot of people. Yeah, we don't need quite so many people in the future.
However, got the reproduction covered.
We need civilization. And the desire to form groups and tribalism and pair bonding and et cetera, has been one of the drivers that has just propelled the civilization so far. And some of it isn't for reproduction. And some of it isn't what you'd expect.
And the fact that we see homosexual behavior in so many species says to me, this completely debunks the whole idea that this is some kind of a social construct, because this is something that predates humanity. This is something that predates human culture. So therefore, if you're going to look at the theory of natural selection, it must serve some biological function
or
give some advantage.
Exactly. And speaking of not being able to quote Richard Dawkins, I was thinking of this earlier, actually, when we were talking to John. I just read a book recently, and I cannot remember the title or even be sure about the author. It may have been The Greatest Show on Earth by Richard Dawkins, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
And in it, the scientist who wrote the book was actually positing that there may be evidence to support the idea that families that tend to have a lot of homosexuals in them tend to have more fertile women for whatever reason. So it could be...
Right, this is the genetic payload concept, isn't
it? Yes, it could be that producing, you know, that family lines that end up being extremely fertile will also produce more gay people.
Right.
And that the fact that people are born as homosexuals is an indicator that they have an extremely physically fit genetic line. Now, I can't... You know, obviously I can't cite a source on that because I can't even remember who wrote the book, let alone what book it was from. I'm kicking myself for that now. But it's not a totally out there concept that homosexuality actually either has a biological advantage or is indicative and related to another biological advantage.
If you have that source and would like to share it with us, you give us a call at 253-584-1480.
But it's funny, this argument that I hear over and over again is that, if everyone in the world were gay, we'd die out in a generation. That
no,
is
we wouldn't.
Crap.
Yeah.
One, it assumes that we're all morons, because, how do gay couples have children now? Wow, they figured out a way.
Yeah.
Through things like in vitro fertilization, through adoption, through things like that.
Because through Viagra, maybe.
Let's just say that everyone in the world, let's just say that those magical leprechauns from Nimbu shook their little magic wand and made every human being on the planet gay. Wow, we're not going to die out, because you know what? All the parts to make babies are still there.
And we would still have a desire to be parents and to raise families.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And this is the same thing that we see with in penguins, we see it in bonobos, we see it in dolphins.
This horse is looking a bit ill.
All right.
I think we're doing good here. This is good stuff. But I think we need to move on. We do have a news story, and oh boy.
Do we?
Oh boy. God. This is, again, it's Daily Mail Day here, I suppose. And the subject is, men should be allowed sex slaves and female prisoners could do the job. And all this from a woman politician from Kuwait. A Kuwaiti woman who once ran for parliament has called for sex slavery to be legalized and suggested that non-Muslim prisoners from war-torn countries could make suitable concubines. Salwa al-Mutariri argued buying a sex slave would protect decent, devout, and virile Kuwaiti men from adultery because buying an imported sex partner would be tantamount to marriage.
And I just find it funny that you could put decent in someone who has a sex slave in the same sentence.
Yeah. I'm literally dumbfounded on this one.
Yeah, I am speechless.
The really sad thing, one, is that it's a woman who's putting this thing forward.
Right.
And two, that she actually does have scriptural support for the thing she's putting in.
There is, yeah. She gave the example of Harun al-Rashid, an 8th century Muslim leader who ruled over an area covered by modern-day Iran, Iraq, and Syria, and was rumored to have 2,000 concubines.
What's the most important part of that sentence?
8th century.
8th century.
Bingo!
Yeah. Nobody was doing particularly good on the human rights front back in the 8th century.
Yeah, I think we can do a little bit better than that in the modern day.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to pattern our world after what people were doing in the 8th century.
This is what happens in these situations. This is based on Sharia law, correct?
Yes, it is.
And she cites somewhere in here, and I can't find it right now, but that this idea that sex slaves and concubines, this would protect the prisoners of war because they would have food and a home and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
And someone to rape them.
Her unbelievable argument for her plan was that captives might, quote, just die of hunger over there, end quote. She insisted, I don't see any problem with this. No problem at all.
Okay, so Sharia law, that's fine. A little bit out of date. There is this thing called the Hague Convention. There's the UN that suggests that when you have prisoners of war, you feed them and you clothe them for the duration of the war.
And you don't rape them.
And you don't rape them.
You don't sell them.
Yeah.
As if they were inanimate objects. I mean, it's just,
I think the moral question over owning human beings and using them essentially as a sex slave, I think that's been dealt with for the most part in the civilized parts of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Kuwait has civilized parts. But it's... there are newer laws. There's a reason why secularism works. People live. Civilization advances. This is why we have, in the Western world and many parts of the rest of the world, we've got a separation between church and state. This is why it's important.
And we talked a lot about Uganda, and we're not just picking on Islam here. Islam is really, really bad. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when you give Christianity the same sort of freedoms and you take away those constitutional protection, you take off the brakes, you take off the handrails, and you get things like, hey, let's kill all the gay people and hunt witches. So this isn't just a question of Islam, though Islam is really bad.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's a lot worse than Christianity in terms of what it preaches. If you want to say that Christianity is Friday the 13th, part 5, we're going to say that, you know, Islam is Saw. Oh,
we are going to get some emails from that.
I was going to make a direct comparison to Jeffords out in Arizona. It's kind of the same thing, but this is a politician talking about it. This is like it's like if Gingrich, no, I don't know, I could, you know, like Gingrich came out and said it or something like
that.
Yeah,
it's a public figure in politics. You know, this is somebody who has a public face.
It's not somebody hiding in a bunker in Arizona.
Right. It's not someone randomly typing on an internet forum.
Right.
Not somebody on a street corner with a sandwich board.
Exactly. And so we've got one more email.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Were we going to do the email or the final news story?
Oh, do the news story.
Okay, because I like this news story. Okay. This is about, Fort Bragg, which is, of course, an army base, a military base, and they have public schools on there for the kids that are, of course, government-run like everything else. They handed out permission slips for kids to take home to sign to go to Vacation Bible School, a secular school. And
there.
This is so cool because, this 12-year-old girl who went to one of these schools at Fort Bragg was given this permission slip. She stuffed it in her backpack, brought it home, showed it to her mom without even looking at what it was.
Hey, field trip.
Exactly. The mother looked at it, told her daughter that it was for vacation Bible school, and it says the student was basically just handed a form and told to give it to her parents to sign. She didn't even read this one until her mother pointed out exactly what the permission slip was for. This feisty and extremely gifted 12-year-old grabbed the paper and crumpled it into a ball, shocked and angry. Her mother later rescued the permission slip from the trash can for posterity, sensing its importance.
Go
and
you.
I just have to say, kid, 12-year-old girl, you're awesome.
Yeah. I've been to vacation Bible school a couple times. I got a couple dates from it. That's about what I got.
Oh, my. And
that's about all you'd get from a date from a vacation Bible school.
Yeah. I didn't work out really well, especially when I went to a church face painting and asked for a barcode on my head.
But, oh, my.
Ooh. Story for a different day.
Story for a different day.
But so this is Fort Bragg. This is a military school, or
yeah, it's a military base, which of course is all government funded, obviously. And there are public schools on the base for, you know, the families who live on the base.
Sure,
this is the same base that actually also used basically taxpayer funds to put on that Franklin Graham Billy Graham, you know, Bible Fest rock concert, and basically said no, that it wouldn't give the same funding to an atheist group that wanted to do the same thing. So fundamentalism on this base is a problem for a long time.
Absolutely.
If you've got information about Fort Bragg and why they tend to be so weird about religion, I'd really like to hear about it. And you can give us a call. Actually, you can call our voicemail at 206-420-0997. You can go to askanatheist.tv and click the shiny candy-like button and leave us a message. I'd really like to hear about this, because we keep hearing about about Fort Bragg and its weirdness. That's about what we've got time for today. We are meeting up at the Red Hot for beer and hot dogs at 6th Avenue in Tacoma. Thank you very much, Mike.
Hey, happy to be here, as always.
Always good to see you, Libby.
I hope to be back again soon.
Hey, all right, my name is Sam Olvey. My hosts today were Libby Mistretta and Mike Gillis. My call screener was Kate Farr. The production assistant was Rebecca Friedman. And as always, our music was by Chris Coleman. You can contact us at askanatheist.tv. You can give us another voicemail again, 206-420-0997. And we will see you at the Red Hot.
Keeping you informed.